This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. In the lead-up to the May 6th primary election, we're talking to the congressional candidates from North Carolina's 2nd District. They include Frank Roach, Clay Aiken, Keith Crisco, Toni Morris, and the incumbent, Renee Elmers. Congresswoman Elmers has declined to come on this program. Today, we're talking to Democratic candidate Keith Crisco. Keith is a retired businessman who spent most of his career as the president and chairman of Ashboro Elastics. He's also served as North Carolina's Commerce Secretary for 4 years under Governor Bev Perdue and joins us now. Keith Crisco, welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
You have two opponents in this race on the Democratic side, Clay Aiken and Toni Morris. What sets you apart?
I have the experience, both in public policy and in business, many contributions over many years, and the experience will allow me to hit the ground running in Washington and do a good job for the people of the 2nd District.
You were Commerce Secretary for 4 years. What did you, and you talk about now job creation. What did you do in that term?
Well, first of all, I think the Commerce Secretary is the best job in government, best job in state government, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. We feel like we made a great impact into the North Carolina economy, and in 4 years in a pretty tough headwind, we helped create 120,000 jobs. That's how many we announced in 4 years, an average of 30,000 per year. And North Carolina was ranked number one in the nation in friendliness for business 3 out of 4 years and number two that one year. So we were real leaders, and there are many other parts of commerce, including energy, including community development. I was the chief job recruiter for North Carolina for 4 years.
What did you do? What did you make? What was your contribution to that overall sense that North Carolina had a great business environment?
Commerce is the point person, and I was the point person of commerce. I'm a very hands-on leader, and I was talking with companies. I was working with the legislature. A kind of a personal attribute was I reached across the aisle and worked for special programs for businesses, and worked again in just about every county in North Carolina and every community. I was again very hands-on and was a team builder, and we had economic development moving.
One of the things the current legislature says and the governor say were missing in all that time was tax relief. And if you really want to be business friendly, you cut taxes. Is that a good way to encourage business to come here?
Taxes are certainly part of the equation, but the number one issue that we were asked time and time again by companies looking at North Carolina was, do you have a well-educated workforce? Taxes are, again, on the list, and so is our facilities, so is infrastructure, but nothing was more important than a trained, educated workforce. Without that, you don't have a business.
All right, what about this philosophy, though? Let's take a look at this, the Republican philosophy that, and again, North Carolina rated among the top places for businesses to come, even with these high taxes, apparently, yeah, allegedly high taxes that the current legislature says were already in place. Still with that, businesses were coming here. Does this mean now with lower taxes and all that other good stuff, we'll have an even better business environment?
Well, of course, it's always a dynamic situation. And if you could hold everything else constant, yes, to be competitive in a tax structure would be important. But the truth is you must also fund education. You must fund infrastructure. You can't, like in sports and like life, you can't do just one thing and expect that one to be a panacea. The companies look at a total package of North Carolina. It looks at our brand, and our brand was innovation, being a leader, being a beacon in the South, and being known as an overall business friendly, including quality of life, our arts, our whole life. You know, we used to tell companies they could thrive and your families can thrive, and that's important.
Do you think the cuts that will follow the tax cuts, I think we're looking at $500 million in cuts, much of that to education in some ways, will that sort of work against some of the gains that the state had made over the decades?
Well, we can only evaluate that after a period of time and see how we're doing. I know that they will balance each other. That's the hope of the current administration. But again, the number one priority was education, and if we lose any ground in education, that's more important than anything else.
Let's talk about some other issues. Okay. Federal debt on everybody's mind and lips. Big, big problem. What would you do?
Well, again, I've bounced many budgets. I've run companies. I understand balance sheets. I understand budgets. I've served on 52 nonprofits in the last 20-some years. I've got an MBA in finance. I would approach it with a very conservative approach. We must address the national debt, but we also need to understand that we must innovate. We must be world leaders. We are world leaders. And our the answer to our debt is have a vibrant economy. There's something about full employment and a good economy. Last time when President Clinton was president, we balanced the budget. We did it through economic growth. That's the key point.
Can you do that given the fact that much of our manufacturing and our actual production base, I mean, a lot of what now substitutes for quality of living is simply low prices because people are making what we used to make overseas for much lower prices. Well, if those prices go up, where are we given the amount of personal debt and government debt that we've encumbered?
Well, the future has economic risk. It's always had economic risk. I'll remind you that I was 30 years a manufacturer. I ran a manufacturing company. That's what I do. And I did it in a traditional manufacturing environment. We are a very big manufacturing state. Now, the profile of what we do in manufacturing has changed significantly. But North Carolina is still a manufacturing leader, and we have the capability through community college training, technical training, through our focus on innovation, through great work at some of our universities, to continue to be a leader in manufacturing. And that's one of the assets I bring to this job, someone who understands what manufacturing can do, and also a world perspective through my work in international affairs of how the world manufacturing has changed, what we need to do as a state, as a nation, to be competitive.
Well, one of the things, the first thing that comes to mind to be competitive, of course, is to lower wages. Is bringing manufacturing back simply a race to the bottom? And what does that do for the standard of living?
It is not. You talk about not lower wages. You talk about unit cost. And through automation, through innovation, we can actually pay more. It's not a race to the bottom. It requires a different educated workforce. It requires high tech. You know, for example, North Carolina 30 years ago started a focus on biotech. We are now number three in the nation in biotech. We've added jobs, high-paying, quality jobs in that sector. We need a similar analysis and similar efforts in other sector, and it will not be a race to the bottom in personal wages. It may be very competitive in unit costs. In textiles, you'll be amazed at companies like Unify, as an example of robotics, have come in. They still employ a goodly number of people. Average wage is up, and we're competitive worldwide. You just can't do it the way we did it way back in 1990. You need to do it where you need to do it now, and we can be competitive.
Well, I want to talk more about that technology part because for a long time, wages and productivity gains went hand in hand. Then there was a big break in 1980. Unions were busted. That came from on high. Ronald Reagan had a lot to do with taking away the leverage for labor. And from that moment forward, we saw productivity could increase, wages could go flat and even decline, which suggests that companies became profitable and enjoyed gains in productivity without hiring people. And in fact, technology makes it easier for them to be productive and profitable. But the last thing they want to do is bring on wages and see that big giant, you know, figure on their ledger, wages and benefits.
Well, actually, I think during that period, there was a change in mix of our economy. And one thing we don't understand enough about is how the mix of our economy change affected those overall numbers. Yes, in my world, the sewing plants that were in all our small towns in North Carolina left, but those were low-wage jobs. And when they're pulled out of the mix, the average wage goes up, the productivity goes up, but it does not have a commensurate change in wages. Therefore, we need to be real clear about the profile, again, of the manufacturing in 1980 versus the profile of manufacturing today. The bottom line is we must be competitive to have the jobs, and corporations do pay for better trained technical they trained workers.
So that gets back to education.
If you don't back put to the education
investment in
every
education
time.
And spend money on education, you might lose out in the long run.
Right.
Affordable Care Act, a big issue in this campaign. Where do you stand on that?
Affordable care is the law of the land, and I think it's becoming to be more accepted by the general public. I think they've enjoyed some recent successes. We need to sit down in the same room with folks who are very critical of this and work out any differences. It is symptom of a major problem. It's called healthcare cost. We are around 16% of GNP. If we get to 20%, we will not compete well. Back to our previous question, for jobs in other countries. Right now, our output of healthcare is not what other countries are, but it costs more. We've got to address that issue some way. This is a wonderful attempt to address that issue. It's not perfect, but you need people with my track record of sitting down and getting things compromised and worked out and move ahead. We should separate our political agenda from our healthcare agenda. Because it's critical to our economic success of our country.
Critics will say this is an economic question. In a couple of years, by mandating health insurance, the costs are going to go through the roof. None of us are going to be able to afford it. That's what the critics say. What do you have to do? First of all, do you agree? And if so, what would you do to prevent that?
I do not agree that managed health care has to increase the cost of oil in the long run. There'll be sectors that'll go up. There'll be temporary increases. There's already been some reductions in cost and insurance costs shown even by this beginning implementation. But in fact, the very reason we're having a managed health care program is to address the long-term medical costs in this country. This may not be the perfect solution, but I think we should agree on the problem, and then we all can work on a solution.
Ideas about immigration reform circulating on Capitol Hill. Do you have any ideas about that?
I do. Immigration reform is critical. We must take some action. I'm an employer. I need hardworking people. Something about my training is when people come to this country and work hard and are family oriented, we need to work out a way to have them help us up our economy.
Should the people who are here now have a pathway to citizenship?
They should first get legal status. We should focus on things that we can get done. And I believe we can sell and agree on a legal status. Get that done, and then let's talk about a pathway to citizenship.
Critics say, look, they're here illegally. They broke the law. There's nothing more to say.
It's not that simple. We have industries that need them. I grew up on a farm. We cannot harvest our crops without some of these people. And they've been here many years. They've worked hard. They've contributed to our society. We need to find a way for them to have legal status. There's many who are contributing to our universities. They're the key to innovation, doing great work. We're not rich enough in innovation to allow these people not to help our economy.
We talked a little bit about education. This is more or less a statewide issue and probably not anything that you might address from your position as a congressman, should you be elected. But teacher evaluation and teacher pay has been a big issue here in the state at the moment. What's your sense of what's happening and what should happen in this state to improve education?
I'm a founding board member of something called Best NC. 60 CEOs, now up to around 70 CEOs, and we're addressing this issue, pushing hard for better pay for teachers, more respect for teachers, and to make North Carolina schools K through 12 world class. It's very difficult to spend positively 46 in pay, and probably headed to 48. And I like to think a leader in that, and someone who has worked in education many, many years. I was on a school board in my town. It is critical for our success. As I started out, we talked about jobs. This is a critical component for our economy. We have got to do something. It's got to be a priority. You're right. It's mainly a state issue. But it's, by the way, the one or number two question I get on the campaign trail is about education and status of teachers in North Carolina.
Part of that is wrapped up in the question of what to do about taxes, and it seems you can't even have a discussion about the possibility of raising taxes, which might be a question at the national level as well as the state level. Is that something you have to do if you want to pay teachers more, if you don't want to be 48th and your budget is small? Do you have to raise money, and does that mean you have to actually say out loud, I'm willing to raise taxes? Are you?
Tax simplification is important, and review of our tax structure is important. I believe that we must make the investment in education.
Yeah,
that
requires raise taxes.
If that requires additional revenue, and if you call that raising taxes, I'd first would look at alternative ways. But at the end of the day, if the choice is we must have new revenue or we cannot raise teacher pay, I would look for new revenue.
Your district has a sizable military population, and that also has been affected by budget cuts at the national level, high rates of unemployment. What would you do to help support this population?
When I was Secretary of Commerce, I spent 20% of my time on military issues, both from base closings to bringing more military-oriented business to North Carolina. We're number 3 in boots on the ground. We're number 39 in jobs from military business. So I feel very comfortable with my background in addressing this. I have great relationships in the Pentagon with some former associates, and I would focus totally on military. The best summary is when I was secretary, someone asked me, well, if this facility went away, Mr. Secretary, how would you replace it for jobs? And my answer was, I don't know. It's so important to us. We cannot let it go away. There's a situation in this district and at Pope. These plans were on where there may be an air wing leaving. Those plans were being discussed a year and a half ago. Our representative wrote a letter 2 weeks ago about it. We should have been at the table from the beginning making our point. If we are aggressive and we're knowledgeable and in the game, we can positively impact any reductions that might be happening to North Carolina.
Should you win the nomination and then go on to win in the general election, you'll go to Washington, D.C., where gridlock is the issue, and how to get together and how to actually form policy becomes almost the number one problem. What's your solution?
In my business, in my community, and as Secretary of Commerce, the one thing I've done, and one thing my reputation is, I work across the aisle, I can work with anybody, and I'm naive yet enough to think that we've got to do that. You're right. Our number one issue is not the policy divide. It's the ideological divide. And if and only if we start working together, we find solutions. There's so many more solutions to our problems in the middle through eliminating gridlock. That is my campaign. Thank you for asking that. That is absolutely what I'll do.
So one of your opponents in the primary race is a guy called Clay Aiken. Do you sing better than he does?
In my church, there are five choirs. There are four choirs. There's five people in my family. Four people in our family are in the choirs. You're looking at the guy who's not in the choir.
Okay. All right. So there you'll concede on the singer-songwriter.
Yeah, if the people of this district seriously are looking for someone who's a great singer, I know who they should vote for. It's probably not Keith Crisco.
All right. Keith, what a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you so much.
Keith Crisco is a retired businessman, former Secretary of Commerce in the state of North Carolina. He is running against Clay Aiken and Toni Morris in the Democratic primary to represent North Carolina's 2nd Congressional District. Stay with us on The State of Things.